This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. At only 30 years old, M.K. Asante has lived a pretty long life. He's born in Zimbabwe, grew up on the streets of what he calls Killadelphia, struggled with two troubled parents and a brother in prison. He found his love for literature and writing as his way out of the dark. And today, he's an author, filmmaker, and a professor. He makes his home right here in Chapel Hill. He's widely known for his hip-hop scholarship and collaborations with Maya Angelou. But in MK's latest book, Buck, he reflects on his own coming-of-age stories. MK Asante joins us on the program now to talk about his latest book, Buck, a Memoir. MK Asante, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Hey, thanks for having me, Frank. Love your show.
Well, thank you very much. Now that you're a local resident, you have a chance to listen.
Exactly.
That's very cool. and have been influenced by your mentor and good friend who lives up the road in Winston, Maya Angelou, as well, who's somebody who's been an influence on you. Is that true?
Yeah, definitely. She's been a huge influence on me. You know, we wrote a film together, The Black Candle, which she also narrates. And actually, when I was working on Buck, my memoir, I went to her house and I asked her, I said, you know, I'm you know, writing a memoir is always difficult and challenging. It has its own challenges. And I asked her, I said, you know, give me some advice, please. And she told me, she said, tell the truth. You know, when you tell the truth, it resonates and connects with people from all walks of life. And so that's what I did. And you know, since the book has come out, people from all walks of life have, you know, written to me and approached me and tell me how it resonated with them. So I thank her for that great advice.
Well, you're telling the truth, we presume, and you're doing it in a particular way with what I would consider a hip-hop aesthetic or sensibility. Is that something that you were conscious of doing when you wrote the memoir?
Well, you know, I think for me, you know, some of the earliest writers that I read when I was in high school, when I first really began to read and fall in love with literature, some of the writers that I were reading were from the Beat Generation. And the writers from the Beat Generation, I'm talking about Kerouac or Burroughs or even Baraka, these guys, you know, they were influenced by jazz and by bebop. And so they let that influenced the rhythm of their prose. And I think for me, coming from the hip-hop generation, post-hip-hop generation, and being a writer and having that as my soundtrack, you know, I think, yeah, it is a hip-hop aesthetic, you know, in terms of the language and the pacing and the rhythm. It's definitely infused in there, so definitely.
Tell us about growing up in Philadelphia. Set the scene for us.
Okay, I'll actually read from the opening of the book.
Perfect.
The fall in Killadelphia. Outside is the color of cornbread and blood. Change hangs in the air like the sneaks on the live wires behind my crib. Me and my big brother Uzi in the kitchen. He's rolling a blunt on top of the source, the one with Tyson on the cover, rocking a koofy, ice grilling through the gloss. Uzi can roll a blunt with his eyes closed. Uzi is the color of walnuts and has a long, sharp face like the African mask my dad hangs up everywhere. His name is Daou. My parents call him Daoudi, and the hood calls him Uzi. He's got a bunch of other names, too, like some superhero. Uwap, Da'u, Uzito, Wap the Culture, Cool D, Pinch P, Big U, Barker Lark, Drop the Miss Rhyme, Big Fly, and Stilt the Kilt.
MK Asante reading from Buck, a Memoir. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's the kind of an introduction to also to my brother Uzi, who's, you know, one of the, he's a huge role, plays a huge role in my life and in the story. You know, he's older than me by about 4 or 5 years, and I follow him everywhere. You know, so kind of I'm like his little black JanSport strapped tight to his back. Everywhere he goes, I go. Everything he tries, I try. And so early on in the story, though, he gets arrested. And that's really kind of a turning point for my whole family, you know, because a lot of things happen as a result of that. A lot of consequences happen in the family.
And it was quite a scene, that arrest. It wasn't that he was pulled over, that the police broke into the house and there were a lot of them.
Yeah, there was, you know, it was a sea of red and blue. The most police officers I'd ever seen, about 20 cops, you know, stormed the door, stormed the house. And this was, you know, my brother was a minor at the time, and it was a stolen car situation. And you know, they put him into custody, and that was really the beginning of the end in some ways.
Well, tell us about your parents. Where do they come from?
Well, my parents are exceptional in the sense that, you know, my dad is one of 16 children, came from Valdosta, Georgia, grew up in a shack, worked from a very young age picking cotton. And, You know, he was able to get out of his impoverished situation by being such a great orator. He learned how to read from the Bible and, you know, was a child preacher, and then eventually went on to college and to graduate school and to become a scholar and an activist. And my mom is from Brooklyn. You know, she kind of a similar situation, but she's city, you know, where my dad is more country. And, you know, my mom is from Brooklyn and she's a dancer, a choreographer. And so they moved to, you know, some people talk about moving back to Africa. Some African-Americans talk about moving back to Africa. Well, my parents actually did that. And that's why I was born in Zimbabwe. They're both from America, but they moved to Zimbabwe to help work on the liberation struggle, you know, independence movement in Zimbabwe. And so then I was born in the early 80s there in Zimbabwe. And then we moved back to Philly a few years after that. And, you know, that's where the story takes place. You know, this memoir, Buck, takes place, you know, between the ages of 13 and 18 in my life in Philadelphia. It's a coming of age story, you know, and it deals with my mom, who after my brother got arrested, you know, got very mentally ill. You know, she struggled with mental illness, depression. She was suicidal. And so her voice is infused in my narrative. So my mom's journal entries that I used to read when I was young and get in trouble for are infused into my story. So you can understand where she's coming from. It's a very different voice. My dad ended up eventually leaving my mom, leaving the house, leaving the family. So we had to deal with that as well.
We should also point out that your father's a well-known professor.
Exactly. You know, he's a scholar. He's an Afrocentrist. They call him the father of Afrocentricity. And, you know, his whole life has been dedicated to Africa and African-Americans and really lifting them up. And so the book is interesting because, and my story is interesting because, you know, both of my parents are accomplished in that way. But at the same time, it's a story about family and the interpersonal things that you don't always get to see when you're talking about people who are in the public. And so those things get dealt with in the book. And those are the nuances that I think make it interesting.
When your home blows up, you end up getting kicked out. How does that happen?
Well, you know, what happens really is I go Buck. You know, I call the book is called Buck. Why? Because young Buck, Buck Wild, Buck Shots, Buck Town, Slave Buck, Black Buck, Make Buck, Buck Now. You know, Buck is so loaded in terms of its meaning. When these things happen, my brother gone, my dad gone, my mom gone, I went Buck Wild. And so getting kicked out of school was just normal to me. You know, I got kicked out of a lot of schools. You know, living on the streets, hanging out with the wrong crew. You know, my mom had enough at one point. She had come back from a mental institution. She had enough with me. She ended up kicking me out. And so there was a lot of unsupervised time on the streets.
If I can get you to read again the section of the book that talks about that, No Place to Be Somebody.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and just to kind of give you some context, like I said, you know, there was a lot going on. I had a best friend who was murdered. And so there were so many things that were happening in my life. And this is from No Place to Be Somebody. No place to be somebody. I can go everywhere but can stay nowhere. I feel like the blunt I'm smoking, burning way too fast. 16 going on what? I dip from spot to spot, going through chambers like a Shaolin warrior lost on an impossible quest. I think it's because most nights I don't sleep. I stay up all night, up with the night workers and night walkers, dope fiends and crooked cops, the stars and the brothers under them searching for stripes, pimps and stick-up kids, truck drivers and dope boys, takeout spots and road crews, hoodies and heels, dungeons and dragons. I love the night. Everything, everyone, everywhere changes when the sun dips.
M.K. Asante reading from his memoir, Buck, a memoir. He's going to be reading Tuesday, September 24th at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh. He's on the program with us now. You talked about your father's scholarship, the fact that they were very conscious of Afrocentric studies. You were born in Zimbabwe. And then you're thrown in the middle of precisely the challenge that they're trying to study, or your father is, academically, how these cultures have clashed and what it means to be African-American today. And you grow up in that, and here's your memoir. How that seems to me that puts you in two places at once. On the one hand, somebody who can extract himself from that situation and look at it. On the other hand, you were living it, and you were on the streets. You were very close to death yourself for most of your adolescence. Do you find yourself having to be sort of two different people as you composed your own memoir?
No, not two different people, but definitely two different times, you know, in the sense that, and I've always felt kind of like a bridge between different worlds, just because I kind of always have existed in different worlds and seen both sides. You know, I was able, when I was young, I went to a good school in Philadelphia, but then I went to the worst school in Philadelphia. You know what I'm saying? I lived in a good neighborhood in Philly, but then I lived in one of the worst neighborhoods in Philly. So I always had this kind of duality in a sense of, you know, understanding what's going on both sides, I guess. But writing this memoir, I think one of the decisions that I made that I'm really happy about was I decided to write this memoir in the first person present tense. And I didn't want this to be, you know, me looking back, you know, on my youth and saying, oh, I used to do this and I used to do this. I wanted to throw you into the moment as the reader, you know, to experience what I was experiencing, to see what I was seeing, to have epiphanies as I was having an epiphany, you know. And so with the first person present tense, you get a sense of urgency. You're in the room with me. You're seeing this unfold. And that is what was kind of a challenge for me, is to take myself back to that time and write authentically from that experience about how I felt then. And so that was a process. But once I got into that, it kind of flowed out of me.
And because from that point of view, as we read in the early chapters, it is not clear at all that the author of this book is going to become a very successful hip-hop artist and a filmmaker and a writer. It's not clear. Not clear in the least. And I think maybe the story of the blank page is a kind of a threshold moment in the book that can give us a glimpse of sort of how you came of age and how you began to work your way out of it. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, this is the story of a lost boy who finds himself and is found in a lot of ways. I didn't have it all figured out, you know, and like I said, it was kind of going all downhill. I'd been arrested, so many things. My mom, tried to commit suicide. I went to see her in the hospital, and she told me, she said, you know, we struggle for education. You have to go back to school. At the time, I wasn't in school. I said, but mom, no school will take me. She said, well, if I find a school that will take you, will you go? And I said, sure, mom. And so she found an alternative school. And I remember the first day I got there, you know, other schools I had been to in Philly, two schools looked like prisons. Another school looked like a warehouse. But this alternative school looked like a gingerbread house. And I remember watching all these kids come in, and these kids were, you know, I didn't have any other word to explain or describe them other than weird. These kids were not the kind of the normal kids. And I remember thinking to myself, alternative school, well, I'm not this darn alternative. but I stuck it out, and I was in one of these classes one day, and a teacher puts a blank piece of paper in front of everyone, and she says, write. And, you know, I hadn't been doing schoolwork for a while at this point, and I said, well, what do you want me to write? And she says, write anything you want. And, you know, I didn't believe her. I thought that she's they want you to express yourself, but then you do it and then you get in trouble. And so I tested the limits, of course, and I wrote an expletive, and she looked at it and she said, okay, good, now keep going. And that was a critical moment because, you know, school up until that point for me was all about rote memorization and regurgitation. It was never about your own voice, your own expression, analytical thinking, any of that. It was all just kind of memorize this. And so this was the first time I was really challenged as a thinker and as a writer. And so let me read to you from that moment.
Yes, please.
I turn the page over. It's blank again. The blank page is the starter pistol that fires and triggers my mind to sprint. What will I write? What will I say? Will I say what I write? Write what I say? How about a story about a boy from Philly, a lost boy who wants to find himself but doesn't know where to look, who wants to tell his story but doesn't know where to begin or end, who searches anyway and discovers something about himself, the world. I stare at the blank page, an ocean of white alive with possibility. I hear myself take a breath, then exhale, deep, like I just rose from underwater. My hand shaking, trembling, like it's freezing. Then it hits, a silence louder than all the music I've heard in my life, all the light in the world in one beam before me. I grip the pen and something shoots down my spine, sits me straight up. The pen feels heavy like it's made of stone. I stare deep into the blank page and see myself. I feel something I've never felt before. Purpose. I don't know what my exact purpose is yet, but I know it has something to do with this pen and this blank page. I am a blank page.
M.K. Asante reading from his memoir, Buck. He'll be at Quail Ridge Books on September 24th. He's with us now. You know, you put your finger on so many things about how the smartest kids figure out real quick that this school thing is a game, that when they say there are no stupid questions, they mean there are stupid questions. When they say write whatever you want, they mean write what I want. And so that means that a whole subset of the really smart population drops out pretty quickly. And then if you see the cops coming in with battering rams to arrest your brother for stealing a car, the idea that the officer is my friend goes out the window pretty quickly too. So you create this kind of sense of what it is like to live in these with all of this hypocrisy around you when you're smart enough to be a writer and a hip-hop and a filmmaker and a hip-hop producer. But for you in that moment, when you felt yourself coming alive and your creative potential explode, did it stay with you? I mean, did you move forward with that moment, or did you not trust it? What were the next 4 weeks like for you?
You know, after that, it definitely stayed with me. You know, I had never felt so alive, honestly. It really was an enchanting moment with a lot of light, and especially coming from such darkness and having experienced such darkness. You know, I told you, you know, my best friend was killed on the streets of Philly, and, you know, I saw a lot of people perish in different ways, you know, whether it was the prison industrial complex or you know, getting killed or... just kind of withering away. And so this presented to me so much light and opportunity and beauty. And there was so much that I wanted to say, so many stories that I wanted to tell. And so I began to, you know, I told my teacher, I said, I want to be a writer. I like this writing thing. And she said, well, okay, if you want to be a writer, you got to be a good reader. So she gave me a book. And I came to her the next day and I said, can I have another book? And she said, sure, but you got to read the book that I gave you yesterday. I said, I already read it. She looked at me like, you know, not believing me. And I started reciting it to her. I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked. And I started reciting it. She said, oh, you read it? I said, yeah, I read it. So then she gave me another book. And I began to read a book a day. I became a voracious reader. I began to realize, you know, I'd always heard that it was illegal for African Americans to read during slavery, and I never understood why until I started reading, realizing that, oh my God, we think in words, we sub-vocalize. So if you limit someone's words and their vocabulary, you also limit their thoughts. They can't even think about freedom because they don't have the language to do so. And so I began to connect my own liberation in Philly with language and reading and vocabulary. And so it really just opened my mind up, and things haven't been the same since.
You know, in times like this where the death of Trayvon Martin is still on many of our minds, where do you think Buck fits in these days?
I think Buck is important because what it does is it humanizes young black boys in a way that sometimes the larger society doesn't. You know, a lot of times we're dehumanized and people can't even see that, you know, these are kids, you know. And we're not even talking about just kids sometimes. We're talking about, you know, the thing that just happened in North Carolina with the football player, you know, being shot. That was in North Carolina, right?
In Charlotte, yeah.
Yeah, that was in Charlotte.
And then there are cases right here in Durham that are still under investigation. We keep going.
Exactly. And so this is happening. And the Trayvon Martin thing is happening all the time. When I grew up, those kinds of things, you know, even with the police, happened all the time. And so what Buck does is it shows that I was Trayvon Martin. You know what I mean? And so now we're talking about, as you said, you know, I was the youngest tenured professor at my university, you know, writer, filmmaker, like, but I was Trayvon Martin. I was that kid. And, you know, it's like I talk to some of my white friends sometimes and we talk about how, you know, when it's, we all do the same. All kids are rebellious and are going to do things and are going to experiment with things. But when it's a black kid, the consequences are different. And so I think what this book helps to do is to humanize and really illustrate our stories and our struggles so that people don't look at a young black boy and think that he's going to hurt them.
M.K., I got to go.
Look at him and think that this is going to be the next poet laureate.
M.K. Asante. The book is called Buck, a Memoir, going to be at Quail Ridge Books on September 24th. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, man. Peace.
Coming up next, sex trafficking in North Carolina. Stay tuned.